All right, let's try that again. So, today's gospel is a bit of a tricky one. It's always a little bit scary to talk about these things where these passages where Christ kind of calls someone out are scary, and anything that could possibly in any way relate to money is also scary, right? So let's share our little bit of a tricky message today. There are a lot of ways that someone can go with this particular passage. Some preachers who are lazy, not your preacher, could say, well, God's message clearly in this is that you shouldn't save up anything for yourself and you should give it all to me, I mean my church. And that's not the message that we're going to have today as I leave here and get into my helicopter and go back to Clearwater. That is not what this text is about. And maybe you've seen the preachers on TV who say, talk about seed money. It's often like specific amounts. Send me your $36 and I will send you these 6 rubber bands. And each of these rubber bands are a different prayer and they will multiply your fortune. Has anyone seen this? Anyone who has insomnia like me? Yeah. But we're not going to go there. Because that's not how it works. But it's also not good to simply dismiss the story altogether. Because there is, even in the uncomfortable parts of the Bible, and there are lots of places of discomfort that we find in this book, there are important things for us to know. So one of the things, as I said, it's a little hard when Jesus calls people out. And in this, he is presented with a struggle between brothers, and he tells, of course, instead of giving a direct answer, he uses a parable, and he uses some harsh language. He doesn't offer a way to fix what they're talking about, but instead tells a story in which God says to the person who has saved up all these treasures, you fool. Now, I don't know about you, but I would hate to be called a fool by anyone, much less God, right? This parable doesn't come like so many others with this last minute kind of fix it. This last bit that makes it better, makes us feel good. It kind of ends with, and now you're dead and this means nothing. But here at MCC Tampa, we aren't going to shy away from what's complicated. And we're going to look deeper into this text and see that there is an important message here. The story speaks of God's economy. What is God's economy? What does that even mean? It's about resources and what we have to do with what we have. So this rich man stores up a lot. He stores up his harvest with no intention of sharing or helping anyone but himself. And of course, as he grows his harvest, he becomes very concerned, not with those around him who might be in need, but where am I going to put all this stuff that I've accumulated? Where am I going to put all these materials? So of course he has an idea. I'll build a bigger thing to keep my stuff in. Anyone else have that experience? Running out of space in your house and just expand. So, the Gospel of Luke, where this reading came from, the whole gospel is very concerned with justice. Wealth and resources are a constant theme throughout the gospel. And for the writer of Luke, money is always connected to justice. Resources are always connected to justice. But there's more. It's not only the issue of justice, which we'll return to in a minute, but it's also about distraction. Because instead of seeing the great wealth that he had, this man was distracted by where he was going to put it. How we function in the face of distraction shapes how we are present to God. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the story of Martha and Mary, the sisters whose house Jesus visited. Mary, as you might remember, sat at Jesus' feet and listened to him talk, and Martha busied herself with lots of activities, and neither of them did the wrong thing, but they certainly weren't pleased with one another about it. Martha was distracted by logistics and all of the things that needed to happen, and she was very angry that her sister left her to do all the heavy lifting. Again, it's a story of distraction, of trying to figure out how we can help each other and help ourselves figure out the right thing to do. Now, there's the reality that there are few things in life that are as distracting as money. Am I right? Yeah. I'm going to guess that at least some of us, even today, have fretted over money. A lot of us are writing our rent check tomorrow. Money is distracting. I might have said the word money a couple minutes ago, and maybe you haven't heard a word I said since because suddenly you realize I forgot to pay my cell phone bill. Is my cable getting shut off? All of these things. Because money's distracting. And yet we need to talk about it. Those who have a lot of money are distracted by how best to invest it, where to put it, what to do with it. And those who don't have much are distracted by this pesky thing called survival. Where so many who find that survival is just barely scraping by. And for people on both sides and those of us who fit into the middle, there is significant judgment all around, right? I mean, I started the sermon with some illustrations of the ways that I think people do it wrong. Begging for money and then getting in my helicopter. I don't really have a helicopter, P.S. I have a beat-up old 12-year-old Toyota that I park across the street so y'all don't have to look at it. So, but what we do and how we handle money is an uncomfortable situation. And that is why we've got stories about it in the Bible, where these brothers come to Jesus and they're upset. And let me just give a little cultural context of where this dispute comes from. In the era in which this story takes place, there's not an equal distribution among siblings. The oldest male, I mean, let's be real, the women are pretty much just left out anyway. That is another sermon. But the oldest male is going to get about 2/3 of the estate, and it'll trickle down to the younger ones, and they'll get what they get. So, of course, the brother who's not getting as much is going to say, this isn't fair. And Jesus, everyone is starting to figure out that Jesus is the one you go to with disputes. Jesus is the one who has the answers. So he says, help us figure it out. And, of course, as Jesus does, answering in a parable doesn't give a solution. So here's the issue of the man who stores up all of his riches in his life, but only has earthly currency, but which is nothing of real substance. To him, he has reached his goal. I can relax, eat, drink, and be merry. Not paying attention to the rest of that phrase, which is, for tomorrow you will die. He thinks that he is set for years. So God tells him, you fool, in this abrupt and challenging way, this sharp wake-up call. It's aimed to get our attention. His point, Jesus' point in the story, is not that the man is a terrible human being. It's not that he is irredeemable, because we know that people aren't irredeemable, but rather that foolish decisions result in the misalignment of priorities and the misuse of resources, which is why Jesus spoke in parables, because the details change, but the truth remains the same. And I'm going to say it again, that foolish decisions result in a misalignment of priorities. Has anyone here ever made a foolish decision? I won't make you tell me what it is. Only a few. Congratulations to those who are not like me. I've made plenty of foolish decisions in order to be able to give you examples, which I won't. But We make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. And the Bible's full of examples of people who are kind of missing the mark because it's important for us to hear people make mistakes and we can reorient ourselves. And so someone who pays almost $1,000 a month in student loans can tell you, that's me, that you make choices with your finances that aren't always good in the long term. The foolish decisions distract us. But they don't make us foolish people. Am I right? We can make mistakes even if we aren't a mistake. You don't have to be wealthy to be in a situation like the rich man. I've certainly never had to build a bigger barn to store all my crops. That's not a reality that I have. But I have been distracted by all of my stuff, all of the things I want, to the point of missing the mark with people. And I know that I'm not alone in that experience. I know that we can all relate in some way to knowing that we don't make the right choice, but we can do better. So, how do we do better? The story tells us that it is about finding what is actually important, what matters the most. The question that the text ends with is, what does it mean to be rich toward God? What does that mean to have a true wealth that is beyond the things that we harvest materially? The psalmist speaks of the steadfast love of God that endures forever. We can rest in that knowledge of that steadfast love, but how do we live into that knowledge? Like Mary sitting at Jesus' feet and Martha busily moving around, we have to find some middle ground of the resting and the comfort and the moving forward. So how do we do it here at church? This isn't the tricky part where I suddenly say, let's open our wallets. I mean, I am also going to tell you to open your wallet. Let's be real. But there are other things. One is simple. It's show up, right? Show up. Come celebrate with us weekend after next. Come to the anniversary party. Come to the anniversary service and celebrate who we are. Not just because, yes, we'd like to have our numbers be good and all of that, but because it benefits your spirit to know that you are part of this wealth of community, this spiritual wealth of these things that are a blessing to God, which are us, our spirits. Bringing your whole self, even when you feel like you're not enough. And that's a hard one, because a lot of us feel like we aren't enough. And when you feel like you're not enough, it's even harder to show up. When you wake up in the morning and you think, I don't have the spiritual or emotional energy to put on a smile and go to church, that's okay. If you need to show up at 10:35 and peace out right after communion, do it anyway. Be here. Get fed. And as you get a little stronger and you feel a little bit more confident, come at 9:45. And come down the hall and sit in there with Jennifer Gerhardt. And even if you don't have the words for the prayer, pray with your mouth closed. Bring your whole self even when it scares you. If the scariest thing that you can manage right now is writing a prayer for the prayer wall, then I encourage you to do it. Bring yourself. Those are the ways that we share our riches, by opening up who we are. Also, we do need to open our wallets. It is a reality. And it is hard, and it is upsetting. And I've had lots of people from this church and other churches and people who have probably never even really been to a church since they were a kid say to me, I don't go to church because all they do is ask for money. Well, there's a reason we ask for money. And it's just the reality of we've got work to do, and work costs money. I wish that we lived in a society where we could just make it happen and have it just magically fall into place, but that's just not how it works in this realm that we're in right now. Eventually, we'll get there. I mean, we'll be dead, but we will get there. So bring yourself and bring your money because we need it. And I hate saying it. Really, trust me, it's super uncomfortable. But that is what the truth is, that we have wealth that we can share in lots of ways. And if you really don't have it, and you really, truly, in your heart, don't have the $20 to come to our anniversary party, you can bring your worth and still come to the party in lots of other ways. We've got lots of jobs that can be done. We've got people in this building is now open almost 7 days a week. And that is almost all. Yes, thank you. And mostly that is volunteer. Even the paid staff volunteers a lot. Because we love it. We love this place and we love you. And I'm not up here saying, you're not doing enough. I'm saying, you are awesome. You are amazing. I want to see more of you. I want to know your spirit. And there will be times like our beautiful volunteer of the month, who I promised I wouldn't embarrass her too much today, when I might ask you to bring yourself in a new way, and it might scare you to death. And I think you should do it anyway. Because I was so scared to come up here when I was a college student, and Phyllis Hunt said, you're going to get up there, and you're going to consecrate communion, and you're going to do readings. And guess what? I'm the pastor of this church. Because not because I am more blessed than anyone else, but because there are people in this church, in this community, who will push each other to be our best, to bring our best, and that is what this parable is about. It's not about having my worth, your worth, that we stash away somewhere else, but rather how we distribute that to other people, how we share it, how we become whole. That is what we are doing. That is why we are celebrating the fact that we have been here for 45 years, and we will be here for another 45 and another 45 after that. So please, celebrate with us, share with us, and bring yourself. Amen.